Hello and welcome to the Useful Idiots National Convention, where we react to the Democratic National Convention that we watch so that you don't have to. I'm Katie Halper.
I'm Mary Matte. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. A little peek behind the hood. We were going to take the rest of the week off because, you know, it's summertime. Our producer, Matt Wilson's on vacation. I'm abroad. But the DNC has been nuts. And there's so much to respond to, so much to be angry about, so much to laugh at. So we figured we'd come in, do a bonus live stream for you. So thank you so much for being here with us. Yeah.
And of course, like, because we are bringing you this on what was supposed to be a week off. So you got to show the love and the like by giving us a like.
All right. Well, somebody who is not feeling very liked right now inside the DNC is the Uncommitted Movement. This is the group of people, you know, led by Palestinians, who rather than pledge their support for Joe Biden in the primary, voted uncommitted to, you know, show their displeasure with his support for Israeli mass murder. And in Michigan alone, they got more than 100,000 people to vote uncommitted, which is huge because that can make the difference in a national election. And the Democrats will need states like Michigan to win. So what is happening right now? Well, the Uncommitted Movement is staging a sit-in outside the convention because they're not being given even the courtesy of letting a Palestinian American who supports Kamala Harris, who will like endorse Kamala Harris, letting them speak on stage. The DNC has let the family of an Israeli hostage, a former Israeli soldier, speak on stage. They've let countless people on stage to, you know, pledge their support for Israel. The DNC platform declares its rock solid support for Israel and criticizes Donald Trump for like not being enough of a warmonger. AOC made a really insulting claim on stage when she said falsely that Kamala Harris is working tirelessly for a ceasefire, which like I don't even think Kamala Harris would pretend that that's true she's busy campaigning. Like she's not even in the room as all the fake ceasefire talks are happening. So Uncommitted Movement staging a sit-in outside the convention asking to be heard, asking for a Palestinian voice to be allowed on stage. And so far, the DNC has said no. So even people who say, we will vote for you, we will endorse you, we want to speak on behalf of the Palestinian American community, they're not even allowed on stage. So somebody who was allowed on stage, sort of like a replacement for Palestinians, is Keith Ellison. He's the Attorney General of Minnesota. And he tried to convince people that, okay, yes, even though you're not being allowed on stage, even though we're not calling for a ceasefire, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, they're listening to you.
Right. Also, it's important to know that he's Muslim American. So I think that that was an attempt to bridge. Not Palestinian, not Arab, but Muslim.
And Tim, they fight for Kamala and Tim, they fight for the people. And they also listen. And when they say we need a ceasefire and an end to the loss of innocent lives in Gaza and to bring hostages home, they're listening, friends. They agree with us. There are people watching tonight and maybe even here tonight who aren't sure yet about Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. If you want to know where they stand on some of the most urgent issues facing our country and the world, let me assure you, Kamala and Tim hear you. They listen, they care, and everyone is included in their circle of compassion. They believe that everybody counts and everybody matters. Let's put a stop to the scam of Donald Trump once and for all. And let's put Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in the White House. Let's go win.
Okay, so everyone's included, Keith Ellison says, but not Palestinians who can't even get one speaking slot on stage. And then he says, if you want to know where they stand on the most important issues, then trust me, they hear you. Well, like the whole point of your comment is to say that you want to know where they stand. So rather than saying that they're listening to people, I'd like to actually listen to hear what their stance is because they haven't said it. They haven't supported a ceasefire. So Keith Ellison is assuring us that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz hear the protesters. They agree with them, he says. But I mean, it'd be nice if that were true. But the problem is there's no evidence for it. And it's hard to take it seriously when they won't even let a Palestinian American who endorses them on stage.
Right. But they did let them have a special panel.
Yes, the Uncommitted Movement was given a panel. That's true.
Which is, I mean, I almost think that's more, that's honestly almost more insulting. It's like, we're not going to let you on the main stage. You're not going to be Showtime, but we'll give you a little room where you can talk about stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I to be honest with you, I don't know what to think of this. I think there's room for all different lanes, right? Like, in fact, we'll show a tweet that made this point. It is from, well, I'll find that tweet in a second. But basically, it's from an activist, a pro-Palestinian activist, who basically says that, you know, we're all on the same team, but people on the team play different positions, which includes some people on the inside. And I, you know,
people want to. To be clear, I'm not judging the people who participated in it. I think you should take every opportunity to right. expose what's happening in Palestine. I mean, there was a doctor on the panel who's an amazing person, but I'm criticizing the DNC for thinking that's sufficient. I'm not saying
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Well, let's hear from somebody from the Uncommitted Movement. He was speaking outside the United Center, and he called somebody from the Democratic Party, like an insider, who was trying to basically broker a deal that would like end the sit-in, and they had this exchange.
Within the system, and I was asking a very reasonable ask not to be suppressed. I was asking a very reasonable ask on behalf of our Palestinian siblings not to be suppressed. And the vice president's decision to suppress us is unacceptable. And so I've run out of options from my position as a delegate. And so I'm leaning into my power as a regular everyday person, and I'm sitting here and I'm not going anywhere, Roger. I'm not going anywhere. You all need to change your mind. I hope you change your mind. Call me if you change your mind. Yeah, just call me if you change your mind, Roger. Thank you. I know. Thank you. Thank you. Please pass it along. Tell the vice president that I'm sitting outside. I'm not going anywhere. I hope she changes her mind. The Palestinian children need to be heard. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to be sitting down right here.
So there it is. You know, basically, and apparently they were offered a private meeting with some Kamala Harris people, and they said no to that. You know, and listen, you know, there's a debate right now, at least on Twitter. I don't know how important that is, but it's on Twitter. And basically some people are saying, you know, the uncommitted people shouldn't even be asking for a slot on stage, because how can you want to speak on stage at the convention of the party that's right. facilitating the genocide? And, you know, that's definitely an argument. Like it's hard to argue with that. But on the other hand, this uncommitted action is exposing the Democratic Party right. for who they are, and that they can't even allow on stage a Palestinian American voice who supports them, right? Who wants to work within the party. That's how racist and bigoted they are, and how afraid they are of Joe Biden's policy of being called out. So I see value in the uncommitted action, and you know, they're playing the inside game, and in the process, they're actually exposing the Democratic Party in a way that for everyone can see just how, you know, how incredibly biased they are toward Israel, to the point where they're willing to silence their own supporters who are simply wanting to call for a ceasefire, even though they also want to endorse Kamala Harris.
Yeah, that's when you know that it's almost like pathological. They can't even do what's in their own superficial, immediate self-interest. And their anti-Palestinian racism is just so normalized. Imagine doing that, saying that to another group.
Yeah, no, exactly. It wouldn't happen. And again, they let in a like family members of a captive were allowed on stage. By the way, the captive is a former Israeli soldier. They won't let a Palestinian American in, by the way, a state that they need to win. They need to win Michigan. Michigan is the largest Muslim American, Arab American population in the country. Won't even let a voice from that on. Congressmember Ilhan Omar, one of the few Democrats to take like a consistent stance, she joined the protest sit-in, and it was kind of a, you know, it was an emotional moment as some people were breaking down at just basically being shut out by their own party.
suppress the voices of Palestinians was, will the meeting be to this?
All right, well, we'll get that clip. It's, again, Ilhan Omar coming over to meet with the protesters. And we're going to play more of Ilhan Omar shortly because she apparently, it looks like she called out AOC for lying on the stage that Kamala Harris was working tirelessly for a ceasefire. So here's Ilhan Omar meeting with the protesters. So for people just listening, you see Ilhan Omar hugging, embracing Abbas Alawiye. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that last name, who is one of the leaders of Uncommitted. And, you know, it's emotional. These people, like, obviously care about the Democratic Party. They consider themselves Democrats, and they're just being totally shunned and insulted. And so, you know, having Ilhan Omar come over and acknowledge them and join them, I think, is, you know, significant for them. But, of course, She's an exception because the rest of the party is shutting them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's turn to.
You think we should turn to the famous the AOC thing to make sure that we get to that or.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's listen to AOC. I mean, most of you, if not all of you, have seen this clip by now, but it's worth playing because it needs to be shamed and mocked because it's just unbelievable that this was said. I mean, she said many things that I think are worthy of criticism, but my only problem with that is like, it's so easy to criticize AOC that it's not really, we're not offering much novel in joining the pile, but this comment in the context of what's happening was particularly egregious. So let's go, and Wilson, let me know if you have the clip, to AOC lying on stage that Kamala Harris is tirelessly working for a ceasefire.
She is working tirelessly to secure a ceasefire in Gaza and bringing hostages home.
I mean, listen, so everyone's seen this clip by now. It's so revolting. It's a complete lie. Not even Kamala Harris would say it because she's busy campaigning. And of course, even if she were present at the U.S. Presence at the ceasefire talks, she knows, like everyone else knows, that the Biden administration is blocking a ceasefire by basically accepting all of Israel's new conditions and pretending as if Hamas is the only obstacle. It's the same song and dance. It's so clear by now. And so on top of that, then she even lies about Kamala Harris being there and working for a ceasefire, which is not even true. But listen, I wanted to give some advice to AOC's people and to AOC about, like, if you're going to lie to the public. Katie, I was just saying, I wanted to give some advice to AOC and her people about how to better lie to the public and pretend as if Kamala Harris is on the right side of history when they know she's not. If AOC and her people want to make that choice to completely sell out Palestinians, to insult them, by claiming that this administration is working for a ceasefire when they're blocking one. Okay, that's their choice. Obviously, she has higher priorities than stopping mass murder and opposing it and being minimally honest about it. But if you're going to say that, why don't you just say, what she should have said was, if she's going to lie, she should have said was, Kamala Harris will work tirelessly for a ceasefire.
Right.
Because that's not technically, it's not provably false because it's in the future.
Right. It could happen. Right.
It's perspective. It's not going to happen, but it could happen. Right. And so therefore,
by saying it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You could like cover your bases by saying it's going to happen by making a fake promise, but at least it wouldn't be such a blatant lie that's like demonstrably false right now. And why she would go and say that, like what compelled her to tell such a ridiculous lie? I'd love to hear an explanation. Like, because all they're actually working for right now is a censorship, not a ceasefire, a censorship of Palestinian voices at the DNC.
And is that a segue to your tweet or Or are you just making that comment? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just making that comment.
Okay. No, it is. And in fact, let's take a look at one of the reasons that AOC's statement is so embarrassing. Because again, Aaron, as you mentioned, and we're offering some free consulting to the AOC team. If you want to lie effectively, you can lie effectively, or you can have plausible deniability because you can say that she's going to be working on it. But she's obviously not doing that now. And how do we know that? Well, we kind of know that because her own advisor, Phil Gordon, tweeted the following out. VP has been clear. She will always ensure Israel is able to defend itself against Iran and Iran-backed terrorist groups. She does not support an arms embargo on Israel. She will continue to work to protect civilians in Gaza and to uphold international humanitarian law. I don't see a ceasefire even nominally mentioned there.
No, of course not. And again, in real life, the Biden administration is playing this just unbelievably cynical game where every time Netanyahu adds a new condition, the Biden administration accepts it, adds it to the so-called, you know, ceasefire deal, and then claims that Hamas is the obstacle. This is what has just happened newly this week. And then Blinken goes before the cameras and declares that Hamas has to accept the deal when the deal keeps changing because Netanyahu keeps adding new conditions. And basically, and what's amazing about Netanyahu's terms is, okay, so he wants to keep control of Israeli control of a border area between Gaza and Egypt called the Philadelphia Corridor. He wants to keep this permanent Israeli military presence there. And amazingly, if you read the Israeli media now,
Netanyahu coming from Philadelphia.
Well, that is very funny. That's right. That's where he grew up, right? Yeah, so he's sentimental. He's sentimental about Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Yeah. That's right. I forgot about that. He's basically an American. I forgot about that. So if you read the Israeli media, maybe it gets mentioned sometimes in the U.S. media at the bottom of an article or something. But like even Israeli military leaders say we don't need to keep control of the Philadelphia corridor. Even they say that, okay? So Netanyahu is just adding these new conditions that he knows Hamas will never accept. And Blinken is going along with it and claiming that that's the ceasefire deal they've been putting forward all along when it keeps changing. So that's what's happening. That's what's happening. And AOC goes before the DNC. And all she says about Gaza is that Kamala Harris is working tirelessly toward a ceasefire. And by the way, this is after a few months ago, she called it a genocide. Right.
Yes. Right. Yeah. She called it an unfolding genocide. She said she stood in Congress. She said, if you want to see what know what an unfolding genocide looks like, this is what it is. And she even defended that when people like Jake Tapper, of course, pushed back on it. But actually, we have I thought it'd be interesting to see a response from a Palestinian activist who actually interrupted Tim Walz. I had him on my show on Tuesday night. But I asked him about his thoughts on AOC's statement. His name is Mataz Salem, and he frequently disrupts meetings. And in fact, he's the guy who one of the people who interrupted that terrible Republican congressman from Tennessee who said goodbye to Palestine. I will never support the Palestinians. I will always support Israel. That was him. So let's take a look at Mataz's response to AOC's statements. This very talked about AOC clip. Remember, she did say in March what was happening in Gaza was an unfolding genocide. Let's hear what she has to say about Kamala.
She is working tirelessly to secure a ceasefire in Gaza.
AOC is just sad. I liked her at some point. It's just been the most pathetic, blatant selling out imaginable. It's insane to me how stupid they think we are and that people do actually fall for that. This absurd concept that when she's in power, that's when she can actually like work towards a ceasefire. Come on. These are real people being murdered every day using these insane bombs, the smart kits, JDAMs, everything from the US. And then you're going to say she's working tirelessly towards a ceasefire. What an insult, honestly.
So there you have it. What an insult. And this is coming from someone, by the way, who liked AOC at one point.
Yeah, well, someone who's in the same squad as AOC is Ilhan Omar. And people can correct me if I'm wrong, but it looked to me like she was calling out AOC for making such a shameless comment. She spoke not inside the DNC, but outside of it. And this is what Ilhan Omar said.
Of Palestinians. It's been unconscionable for me in the last 10 months to witness my colleagues in this administration refusing to recognize the genocidal war that is taking place in Gaza, to not see the mothers who have lost countless children, the babies whose dead bodies are being dug out, to not understand that working tirelessly for a ceasefire is really not a thing, and they should be ashamed of themselves for saying such thing. Because we supply these weapons. So if you really wanted a ceasefire, you just stop sending the weapons.
That's
right. It is that simple.
That's right.
So for me, it is clear. If we truly saw Palestinians as equal human beings to Israelis, we would feel as equal of a pain as we felt on October 7th in the last 10 months, where the tragedy of seeing maybe 40,000 people, if not more, some people are saying it's over 100,000. And it is financed by our government with our tax dollars, with impunity on the national and international stage. Now ask yourselves, how does our Secretary of State travel 11 times begging for an end to a situation that we truly have continued to provide the bombs and the weapons that are creating that situation?
So there's Ilhan Omar calling out AOC and Antony Blinken. And, you know, she makes the obvious point that the only way to work for a ceasefire is simply to stop the weapons, which right. they're not doing. And she calls out what AOC said. And I really salute her for it, because that had to be called out. Now, I wanted to respond to a viewer comment. I don't really ever read the comments, but I happen to catch this stray, so I'm going to respond to it. So Amir says, is Kamala supposed to outwardly oppose Biden? I say yes. If there's mass murder going on and you're going to come in and you're running on a platform where you're supposed to tell people what your policy is, and you claim, or at least people, if you oppose the mass murder, I don't think Kamala Harris does, but if she's going to, then yes, I think you should oppose mass murder personally. So that's my answer. I mean, yes, she's serving in his administration. It's a little bit awkward, but since the vice president is a ceremonial role anyway, you know, Mike Pence had disagreements with Donald Trump. Why can't Kamala Harris have disagreement with Joe Biden about genocide, or if you don't like the term genocide, mass murder? So yes, she can, I think, oppose Biden's policy. Or at least she can say, you know, when I take office, things will be different.
Well, what she really could do more realistically is tell Biden, I need to win this election. I need to do the right thing. Not that she cares about that, but I need to win the election by getting young people and progressives, Arab Americans, Muslim Americans on board. And so we're going to have to start changing that now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Why should Kamala Harris, like, strictly from an electoral point of view, forgetting like morality, because obviously politicians don't have that. Why should Kamala Harris let Joe Biden kill her election chances because he's a fanatic Zionist committed to slaughtering Palestinian civilians? I mean, it's true. This is not her policy. Like, she doesn't make policy decisions, but she is in the administration that is carrying it out. Right. And so she does own in that respect. And so for, you know, her own political chances, yeah, why not insist that Biden do that? Because look, they already got Biden to step down, showing that he was susceptible to pressure and leverage. So why not do it when it comes to stopping mass murder, or at least try? But what is Kamala Harris instead, the campaign, doing? Well, they're using the AOC lie to promote Kamala Harris. So this is from Kamala Harris's TikTok channel, which says this. It says, AOC, Kamala Harris is working tirelessly to secure a ceasefire in Gaza. So while everybody pretty much knows that AOC was lying, the Kamala Harris team thought it was a good idea to highlight her fake claim on their TikTok channel, which, by the way, I thought the Kamala Harris Biden administration wanted to ban. So, but maybe that's the kind of misinformation on TikTok that was spreading that they wanted to crack down on.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. It is misinformation. I mean, that's a good example of it.
All right. Well, listen, he is still the president, even though everybody wants to forget about him. He was given a speaking slot at the DNC, even though really the DNC is a giant celebration that he's not running. Yes. But Joe Biden had a lot to say, including about Gaza. By the way, apparently his speaking slot started like way late.
Yeah, I know.
He came on at like midnight or something like that.
Yeah, was that to show that he was actually capable of speaking late?
Well, so he proved it. Joe stayed up past midnight, past his bedtime. Okay, let's go to Joe Biden. He said something I would say just as offensive as what AOC said about Gaza.
Those protesters out in the street, they have a point. A lot of innocent people are being killed on both sides.
Yeah, that's not what the protesters are saying, Joe. They're not saying that people are being killed on both sides. They're saying that one side is committing genocide. Okay, you can't both sides of genocide, especially when one side of it is trapped in a concentration camp and can't leave. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, that he's claiming to speak for the protesters, like as if that's their point.
Yeah.
As opposed to there's a genocide on one side, and also we are funding one side, and we are legitimizing one side, and we are giving logistical support to one side, and we are arming one side. But besides that, you're totally on, Joe.
I love to think about how like Joe Biden's staffers like come up with talking points for him. Like, I mean, in those, because these are the most cynical people in the world. They're like arming and enabling a military as it carries out a massacre in a death camp, as it blocks food, water, medicine, destroys infrastructure, lets polio spread. I mean, all the stuff which is openly declared by the Israeli military and Israeli spokespeople that they want to do. So the Biden administration, which is supporting all this, like how do they come up with talking points that make it sound as if they're empathetic and they care about the protesters while continuing the policy? And I think that's one of the things they came up with. It's like, let's talk about the civilian suffering, but on both sides, right? Because we don't want to acknowledge that actually the suffering is entirely on one side. So let's both sides of genocide. And that's what they came up with. Abby Martin had a good tweet about this where she compared the reality of both sides, and this is what it looks like. One side, they're on the beach in Tel Aviv, playing volleyball, having a great time, right? Everyone's laughing, having a wonderful time. That's life in Tel Aviv. Another side, it's like an apocalyptic death camp. I mean, it's so insane. It's just so insane. So that's Joe Biden, both sides.
Yeah, he really nailed it. Do we want to do some more Joe Biden? Because he had a real zinger.
Well, let's do Joe Biden speaking about the U.S. place in the world. Yeah. And, you know, Joe Biden, who loves to brag about how the U.S. can fuel two apocalyptic wars at the same time. One of them a genocide, the other one a proxy war in Ukraine. Joe Biden talked about the U.S. role in the world.
He's the loser. He's dead wrong. Many of you are very successful people who travel the world. Name me a country in the world that doesn't think we're the leading nation in the world. Without America, not a joke, think about it. I'm being literal. Who could lead the world other than the United States of America? Well, guess what?
So, okay, who can lead the world other than the United States of America? Okay, well, if you look at the world right now, I would say literally anybody. Okay, and I think the world's saying, please, anybody. But it's like, look at the entitlement here, and like, look how he sees the U.S. as a hegemon. And it's like, it's dictatorial. Dictators think they have an inherent right to lead everybody else. You know, like, what's democratic about that? It's an insane way of looking at the world. It's unhinged, but it's considered normal. And it looks like this is what animates Joe Biden's entire existence. Like, this is what he spent his career doing, is defending U.S. hegemony. Look where it's got us. You know, he claims a divine right to be a hegemon. That's pretty much what it comes down to.
It's so disgusting. And of course it gets cheers.
It gets a lot of cheers. Okay. Well, we have more Joe Biden.
Yeah. If you think that was good.
In Europe, like it had been united for years, adding Finland and Sweden to NATO. Ten days before he died, Henry Kissinger called and said, not since Napoleon has Europe not looked over their shoulder at Russia with dread until now. Well, guess what? Putin thought he'd take Kyiv in 3 days. 3 years later, Ukraine is still free.
Now, can I say something? It wasn't actually Putin who said we're going to take Kyiv in 3 days, because he didn't send enough troops to take Kyiv. It was Mark Milley. It was Biden's own chair of the Joint Chiefs who said Kyiv will fall likely in 3 days. So Biden is mixing up his top military leader, his former top military leader, with Vladimir Putin. Just a small correction to Joe Biden.
The best of us. Who doesn't
think
those two?
Yeah, yeah. But again, it's like, this is like Joe Biden's signature achievement that, like, okay, the Ukraine war is still raging. Ukraine's losing one-fifth of its territory. NATO added two more members. He's very proud of that. Unfortunately, meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of people are dying. There was a whole peace deal on the table 2 years ago, more than that could have been achieved. You know, minor details. But these are the things that, if you look at Joe Biden, like, he really is Sleepy Joe, except when he's talking about safeguarding U.S. hegemony.
Yeah. I like the way he quotes, he refers to Napoleon and Kissinger. I mean,
yes.
Napoleon has a lot of blood on his hands, and so does Kissinger. So in a way, those are pretty apt.
Okay. All right. Who do we want to hear from next?
Should we show how much contempt the Democrats have for the protesters? I think those are pretty good clips.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, there's so many examples of this. There's been a lot of protest action at the DNC. Obviously, the uncommitted sit-in outside demanding a Palestinian be allowed to speak on stage. Many other voices calling for a ceasefire. Katie, which clip do you want to show of a protester being silenced?
Let me see. How about we show person getting hit on the head?
Okay.
So here we have a protester wearing a hijab. And here's how a Democratic delegate responded to her. When Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, he already had 3 missed calls from Chuck Norris.
We all know the man, the myth, and the legend of Chuck Norris. But did you know that in his 80s, he's still alive and kicking butt? Either that, or death is too afraid to tell him the news. Chuck wants to share with you what gives him so much energy to work out, stay active, and keep up with his grandkids. He did this just by making one change. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s.
And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/useful for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/useful.
This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
And preview, it's not very polite.
Yeah.
group we had to meet was, as I told you then, the winter of peril and possibility.
So if you just rewind it from the beginning, you're going to see it. He's hitting him on the head with the Harris.
The group we had to meet was, as I told you then.
Now, can you imagine for one second if I pointed this out the other day, but if someone with a yarmulke on was hit over the head with a sign, how much we would hear about anti-Semitism and Jewish safety?
Yeah. There's also, I mean, we don't have to go through all the clips, but there's also the one where outside the convention, people are listing off the names of dead Palestinian children, and literally DNC delegates are covering their ears.
Yeah.
Yeah. But listen, we've had some depressing content so far. So let's hear a cleanser. There was such a warm reaction in the media to Michelle Obama's speech. I didn't see it, so I don't know what she said, but I did see just how basically people were like, it was almost like a spiritual, well, actually, let's hear it. It literally was a spiritual experience for Van Jones of CNN. And this was his reaction to hearing Michelle Obama and other DNC speakers.
Goldilocks, they're not perfect. This was a masterful act of leadership. It was a sacred task. They took it on well. It was like an oasis. I didn't realize I had been in a spiritual desert until they created that oasis on that stage, and they did a beautiful job tonight. David?
Who knew?
He was so thirsty.
He was so thirsty, and he found salvation in the spiritual oasis of the DNC stage. The DNC should get into wellness, like do retreats for people and things like that.
Right, and of course, Van Jones. We should point out, never forget that Van Jones is someone who compared wearing a keffiyeh to showing up in Harlem with a Confederate flag. So he is very, very nuanced and reliable analysis on this issue.
Yes, yes. Rachel Maddow also had a really strong reaction to Michelle Obama's speech, which again, I didn't see. So maybe I'm missing how like life-changing this was. But Rachel Maddow basically said this was like a deep, deep, deep speech. And if you watch Rachel Maddow's response, it's like she's visibly moved by it. And maybe Rachel Maddow's life has even been changed as a result of listening to Michelle Obama on stage. Let's watch.
Michelle Obama, that I have to say is one of the best convention speeches I've ever seen by anybody in any circumstance. Not just because she's good at giving a speech, but because it was subtle and deep and thought-provoking and surprising. She did make a parallel point that her husband made as well in his speech about how this is going to be a close election and how there are practical things that need to be done. But her speech, speaking from a place, both a practical and very heartfelt place about what it is to be a person in politics, what it is to be a person in politics when you feel like you've got the momentum, but also when it feels like the momentum's gone, and when there's despair around your prospects, and when you make mistakes, and what people need to do to shore you up in that moment. Very unusual, I think perfectly delivered, and just a stunning speech.
There you go, everybody.
Stunning speech, yeah.
Yeah. You know, forget self-help books, you know, therapy. Just listen to the DNC speeches on loop. You know, it's a spiritual oasis. It's deep. Your life will be changed. And all the answers are there.
Yeah, between you're going to fill your you're going to get your oasis taken care of. You're going to get depth and nuance. You're going to get entertainment. Everything. Radical self-care. You know, they're not radical politicians, but they do offer radical self-care.
Okay, let's turn to a speaker who, unlike Palestinians, was welcome to the stage. There's like all these people welcome to the stage who are not even Democrats, like Trump's former press secretary, who's a Republican. She was welcome to the stage. And then you have Ana Navarro, who I don't know if she's still with The View, but she's had a stint hosting The View. comes from a family basically of death squad members in Nicaragua. Her father was a member of the Contras, which is a U.S. armed death squad. And she was given a speaking slot on stage because Democrats really want to slam home the message that while Palestinians are not really welcome on stage, you know, descendants of right-wing Central American death squads are. And so Anna Navarro had this to share about Donald Trump and Kamala Harris.
Donald Trump and his minions call Kamala a communist. I know communism. I fled communism from Nicaragua when I was 8 years old. I don't take it lightly. And let me tell you what communist dictators do.
All right, well,
I want to know what they do.
Yeah, well, but like just a correction. She did not flee communism. Her family fled because her father was fighting to overthrow the Sandinista government, which the majority of Nicaraguans supported, but the U.S. didn't because the Sandinistas made the mistake of trying to like use their country's resources for their own people, not for rich U.S. corporations. And so that's why her family fled. Her father stayed behind to, you know, keep fighting in these death squads.
To engage in more terrorism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and like, just like specialize in torture and rape and skinning people alive, yeah.
You know, they would terrorize peasants. They would blow up, you know, like anything. They would contaminate crops. Like these are just, you know, anyway, so that's what she comes from. And that's who they have on stage speaking as a moral authority.
Yeah.
So do you want to hear more about?
I want to hear what communist dictators do. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's never just for one day. They attack the free press. They call them the enemy of the people, like Ortega does in Nicaragua. They put their unqualified relatives in cushy government jobs so they can get rich of their positions, like the Castros do in Cuba. And
we would never do that in the United States.
I mean, I think she's trying to suggest that Donald Trump is a communist.
That's right.
Yeah.
I never put that together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put that together. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, what's cool about the U.S., it's like, you know, our leaders don't just put their voters in cushy government jobs. They also get them jobs in the private sector. So, for example, Joe Biden got Hunter Biden a very lucrative board seat with Burisma in Ukraine. The Clintons, Chelsea Clinton was like working as a correspondent for NBC News for a while. All these people have really earned their way in the private sector, unlike the communists. That's really funny. Okay. And of course, we would never put journalists in prison. You know, the whole Julian Assange thing did not happen.
Nope. That was who did that.
All right. Well, we have limited time left. So much to choose from. Katie, any favorites that you want to make sure that we get to?
I mean, I like seeing how the protesters are treated. I think that's worth it. I think we should show the one that you described, actually, of people walking out, because it's kind of stunning to see. And then I would also show the other one of protesters when their signs are covered up.
Okay, so you want to see people covering up their ears so that they don't have to hear the names of dead Palestinian children? Okay.
And the delegates cover up pro-Palestine signs.
Okay. All right. Here they are.
Say it again. Mock them again. Mock the children again. Do it again.
18 years old. 18 years old. Yusuf Hassan. 18 years old. Turn around and join the uncommitted delegates in the protest.
Can you imagine, like, just the... I mean, at least keep it to yourselves how much you don't care about the deaths of Palestinians. Like, keep your contempt for people protesting a genocide to yourself. But it speaks again to just how acceptable the not only apathy towards killing Palestinians, but the anger towards people who are upset about the killing of Palestinians is. And these are people who are, they don't care that they're being filmed on phones. Like, they don't, just for the sake of not making Democrats look like ghouls, they just have no humanity. And let's take a look. I mean, I can't believe it. The mocking, 18 years old, mocking the age of someone who was killed and going like that. Let's take a look at what happened when people people held up a Palestine sign. Literally ripped the sign up. That's how much the DNC respects democracy. I mean, it's a metaphor in a way. Joe Biden literally covering up a protest of Palestinians. It's like the way he just blocks them, right? Like, it's a perfect metaphor of how he invisibilizes Palestinians.
And look what happened to this demonstrator. Okay, so she's like a total supporter of Kamala Harris, went to an event in Milwaukee for Tim Walz. Her T-shirt just simply said "Free Gaza," and they forced her to leave just like that. She was not even saying anything, but just the words "Free Gaza" got her kicked out of a Tim Walz event. Just that, without even saying anything. That's how like intolerant they are of anything that acknowledges what's going on in Gaza and calls attention to it.
Jesus. She cheered. It says that she was thrilled to support the first female president. I cheered in my seat for 4 hours waiting for Harris.
Yeah.
It's under.
Sorry. Sorry. Can't wear a shirt that says "Free Gaza." Yeah. You're out. You're out.
Violate the dress code. You're out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's turn to Senator Elizabeth Warren. Because she's one of the few people who, you know, could be associated with policies like Medicare for All. Remember when that used to be a thing?
Yeah.
We used to talk about that. Bernie Sanders really championed it. There's a lot of momentum behind it. Kamala Harris once co-sponsored a Medicare for All resolution, right? Which, now that she's a nominee for president, she says, sorry, I no longer support.
Right.
So Elizabeth Warren was asked about, hey, like, does Kamala Harris have any policy positions? And what about the policies that she's renounced that you support, and is that of any concern whatsoever? And this is what Elizabeth Warren said.
President Harris both ran in the 2019 Democratic primary for the 2020 election, I should say, in 2019. She has changed her position on Medicare for All, banning fracking, things that you were once in agreement on. I wonder what you make of that. Is that, are you okay with that, or is it just cold, hard political calculus of where the electorate is now? What do you make of that?
You know, I see it right now as we're dealing with the issues that are right in front of us. And the big issue right now for us is, first, that we need to protect access to Roe versus Wade, access to abortion across this country. Let's keep in mind, 30% of all women in America now live in a state that effectively bans abortion. And if Donald Trump and J.D. Vance make it to the White House, it won't be 30%, it'll be 100%. The other thing that we are all tightly focused on, and that a President Harris is going to lead us on, is how to cut down costs for American families. She's put out some really strong plans, like those on price gouging. Donald Trump's got nothing. So I think these are the two big contrasts, and they tell us the most about who Kamala Harris is and what kind of a president she will be.
I mean, listen, I don't want to dismiss what's true about what she says, which is that Trump does have nothing. He does. He has absolutely nothing or very little, I should say, because like he's got some proposals that are helpful to working people. Like, you could argue not taxing tips.
Right.
But like, is this going to be the new normal where basically we like to progress, like Democrats abandon all their stated positions just because of the threat of Republicans coming in? I mean, this means like, how is anything ever going to get done if every time there's an election, Democrats say, well, we have to pit basically Medicare for All versus protecting access to abortion? Like, why can't it be both? You know,
right.
why can't I you mean, say, Sorry, at one point, why can't Kamala just say, you know, I personally still support Medicare for all, but it's not really possible right now, so I'm not going to be able to do it. But by the way, I still support it. That's what Obama said. Like, that was his cop-out. And at least that's like, okay, so you're acknowledging you're not going to do it, but at least you're not abandoning the idea. But they can't even do that anymore. Right. Now it's like, I don't support it anymore.
See, this episode is really good because we're giving some great consulting tips for free. We've helped AOC lie more effectively. We're helping Kamala lie more effectively. I hope they are watching this. But it is interesting, you know, what Warren says. Yeah, Roe v. Wade does matter. And Biden and the Democrats did not do anything to codify it.
That's true. They didn't. That's true. And then since they didn't, now they have to say we can't have anything else because we need to defend it now after we failed to codify it before. Yeah. Yeah. But listen, on your point about us being consultants, like we could change the stream name to the Democratic National Consultation.
Oh, okay? Yeah. Yeah.
We're doling out consultation advice. I've always wanted to be a consultant because I never quite understood what a consultant is. So this is really a great experience for me.
Yeah.
Excited.
Learning on the job.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're nearing the end of the show, and we thank you everyone for tuning in and bearing with us as we do this sort of on the fly. And we thank also, especially our producer, Matt Wilson, for taking a break from his vacation to do the show. It was very kind of him. As a special treat, let's hear from Nancy Pelosi, who was on the Stephen Colbert show. She was protested in the crowd by people wanting a ceasefire in Gaza. And Nancy Pelosi had this to say.
We've had a commitment to Israel. It's been in our security interest to do so. Israel was attacked by a terrorist organization. We want the hostages free, but we don't want children killed in Gaza. And so we have to come up with a solution. And right now, we just got word earlier today that Israel had agreed to the ceasefire agreement. We're hoping that Hamas will too. But it takes...
Okay, so this is the Democratic Party spinning for Benjamin Netanyahu, adopting the new line that Netanyahu can add any conditions he wants. And when he does, that means he's accepting the deal. And now Palestinians have to accept it. And he's adding conditions that he knows Palestinians will never accept, because one of his new conditions, as we talked about earlier, includes an Israeli permanent military presence along the Egypt-Gaza border, and also letting Israel also be in the north to basically harass and vet Palestinians returning home to their to what's left of their homes. So that's Nancy Pelosi. I never use the term, but I'm going to make a rare exception, gaslighting. And claiming that Hamas needs to accept the deal. And then in this next clip we have, she faced a protest from the crowd.
Have to learn more about trust and peace and learning about each other rather than to have conflict resolved by war.
Well, as you can see from the continuing protest out here, that answer is unsatisfying to some people, because they believe that the United States... Hold on one second. Would you like to respond to what they're saying?
Yeah, well, what I was saying is...
Will you listen to her response if she...
screaming, I can't hear them, but to those who have
They've said that the United States should not have any role in supplying Israel arms to kill the people of Gaza now. Well, that's what they're saying.
Israel has a right to defend itself.
Agreed. And the hostages should be returned.
And the hostages should be returned. But the other part of it is that has been so major for all of us for many years is that there must be a two-state solution. You cannot have peace.
Well, as Gideon Levy, there are two things. One is that is not what she's being asked about. And Colbert communicated very clearly what she was being asked about, which is about the United States arming Israel. That the two-state solution has nothing to do with that. And also the two-state solution is a joke, as we know.
Yeah, well, it's in Democratic parlance, it's a fig leaf to cover up for what's actually happening, which is Israel's continued destruction of a two-state solution by stealing more Palestinian land. They've been talking for years about, like George W. Bush was talking about this. He's like, we need a vision far off in the distance for a Palestinian state. So while Democrats, Republicans are looking on a path toward a Palestinian state, a vision toward the future, what's actually happening before our eyes with U.S. funding is Israel stealing more Palestinian land, now making Gaza unlivable to make a Palestinian state impossible. So it's just a complete joke, as you said, to call for a two-state solution when you're helping Israel destroy it every single day. And then she says Israel's right to defend itself. And it's like, this came on the day when that video was circulating on Twitter of a Palestinian child's head blown into, which I believe Elon Musk's Twitter took down, deleted, censored. I saw some claims to that effect. So that's Israel defending itself, is by blowing up more Palestinian children, burning them alive, doing all the things that Palestinians were falsely accused of doing on October 7th. And it's just unbelievable. Like, so, you know, Leila Al-Aryan, a journalist with Al Jazeera, said this best. She said, if I follow Israel's logic, nothing justifies October 7th, but October 7th justifies everything.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what Nancy Pelosi is basically adopting there too. That, okay, because the people you're occupying resisted on one day and some civilians were killed on that one day, this gives us the right to wage a 10-month long ongoing mass murder campaign.
Right. And also, we know that Israel doesn't want the two-state solution. And as Gideon Levy has pointed out in the past, every single person who is now calling for a two-state solution was against it when it was politically possible. Because, as you said, it's a fig leaf. No one actually wants to do it. But again, even let's say for argument's sake, you thought a two-state solution was important and viable and doable. Again, that has nothing to do with arming Israel as it commits war crimes. Why did you think that would help create a two-state solution?
Yeah. Okay.
Am I being like way too soft on Colbert to be kind of like, not, I don't want to say impressed, but surprised that he actually articulated what the protesters were saying as opposed to just helping talk over them?
Yeah, sure. He didn't mock them. That's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. The bar is very low.
Yeah, the bar is very low, yeah. You know what's so sad is that he did such great stuff. I don't know if you remember this, but with the Mari Marva, is that the name of the Turkish ship that tried to get to Gaza?
I believe that's like almost exactly the name. It's the Mari Marmara.
And he did amazing stuff on that, amazing coverage on that. And he had Michael Oren on, the ambassador, and he mocked him for not letting in, you know, like salad or lettuce. He even said that Colbert actually said to him, because remember Helen Thomas, the journalist, got into trouble for saying that Israelis should go back to Poland, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, I can't believe what Helen Thomas said. It's so terrible. It's so disgusting. If anything, Palestinians should go back to where they come from.
Wow. That's such a, it's hard to imagine that Stephen Colbert now.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of seeing him live during that era when he was doing the Colbert Report, and he was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Like, not just, I mean, you know, sharp, as you were just giving some examples of, but also just such a brilliant performer. It's
funny, yeah.
So it's much sad, fun. But you know, but that's kudos to him for not kudos to him for not mocking those protesters. Yeah. And by the way, the Turkish ship was called the Mavi Marmara.
Mavi Marmara.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap soon. Wilson, I'm calling an audible. I'm gonna bring in this clip because, you know, we talked earlier about how deep the convention has been, like MSNBC, Ben Jones are talking, you know, Ben Jones is talking about this being like a spiritual oasis.
Yeah.
Here's some more deep thoughts. This is from the chief healer in chief or co-healer in chief along with Michelle Obama, Barack Obama. This is what he said about the nature of our materialistic society. And let me just, there it is. Okay.
I know these ideas can feel pretty naive right now. We live in a time of such confusion and rancor, with a culture that puts a premium on things that don't last. Money, fame, status, likes.
Okay. Have you paid attention to what Barack Obama's been doing since leaving office? Like, what was the first thing he did after leaving office? Well, like, you know, like as Trump was being inaugurated and the country was like, his supporters were in mourning, he was out jet skiing with Richard Branson, right? Like splashing around in the water.
Yeah.
Then he gets a Netflix deal for like, I don't know, $70 million, buys a house, buys a mansion in Martha's Vineyard.
The very, salt of the earth, Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah. And now he's lecturing us about like, you know, being materialistic and like going for, you know, vain, cheap likes and, you know, like things that don't matter in life. I mean, come on. But anyway, this is apparently what CNN and MSNBC found so deep and moving.
Wow.
Oh, man. Okay. Well,
there's one more thing I wanted to point out, which is that I don't have the Twitter on me. And apologies, by the way, I had a tech issue. I'm not on my own laptop, so I'm not logged into things. So if I was looking down, it was because I was looking things up on my phone as opposed to what I usually do on the laptop. But, Ryan Grimm pointed this out, that the Democratic platform acknowledged, you know, this is so great because obviously, as people know, and we've been talking about this on the show, Israeli soldiers raped an inmate, have raped inmates to such an extent that the Israeli police attempted to arrest them. And then when that happened, of course, the Israelis protested for the right to rape. We know that the Knesset member said it was legitimate to insert sticks into someone's rectum. We know that they released video of taking a man, an inmate. This was literally released video on Israeli media. Soldiers taking a man behind some like they obstructed the view. And then he had to be treated for internal injuries that were caused by anal penetration of objects. And so, you know, the media here is totally ignoring that. The media, of course, was very open and vocal about the rapes that didn't happen, the mass rape that Hamas engaged in that has been debunked. So, Aaron, I was so happy that the DNC platform acknowledged rape in the context of Israel-Palestine. And surely we're going to think, one might think that it's because there's this undeniable evidence of the Israeli military raping Palestinian inmates. No, they made mention of Hamas's rape on October 7th. That is the only mention of it.
The allegations are of rape, but as we've covered on the show, there's no evidence for even a single act of rape on October 7th. But funnily enough, the platform doesn't say rape. It says sexual violence.
Sexual violence, right.
And Ali Abonnema pointed this out, that, you know, the claim has been rape, but all of a sudden they're going with sexual violence. And what Ali Abonnema said was that basically this could be a recognition on the Democrats' part that the rape claims are just so baseless that they can't use them anymore. So now they're pivoting, just calling it sexual violence because, you know, the whole claim so far has been rape, Hamas rape.
Right.
But, as you know, because of the work.
Thanks. Sorry, I didn't have in front of me, or else I would read.
You know, but it's interesting. So basically, so first of all, they're of course not mentioning the, as you point out, the actual sexual violence, the actual rape, which carried up Israel, and this speaks to why, by the way, it was so vital to subject these Israeli claims of Hamas rape to scrutiny, is because the whole point of them was not just to, you know, distract from Israel's actual practice of rape and torture, but also to manufacture support for mass murder. Because in saying that Hamas committed systematic sexual violence, rape, the message was sent that these people are just barbarians. We cannot negotiate with them. We can't engage in a ceasefire. They have to be destroyed. And if all Gaza has to be destroyed, well, so be it, because these people are just so depraved. So Democrats are still using that to justify their continued support for Israeli mass murder. But the claim has been so debunked by for so long now, you know, and we've covered that a lot on this show, how it's been debunked, that they can't even say rape anymore. So that was just notable to me that they went with that term sexual violence, not rape.
Yeah, I actually, Wilson, I put it in. If you can just click, I put it in a private message, the link to the tweet, I just want to show something. Yeah, if you can just click on the actual image, you don't have to see the tweet, but the image. Yeah, exactly. So it's just fascinating. So what they say here is President Biden and Vice President Harris have unequivocally denounced Hamas's brutal attack on Israel on October 7th, condemned the gruesome violence, including conflict-related sexual violence demonstrated by Hamas, and made clear that the United States wants to see Hamas defeated. But it's so fascinating that they don't say anything about condemning, let's say, the war crimes, or what do they call it? Civilian deaths that Israel has participated in, has engaged in.
Yeah. And then there's a different part of the platform where they basically criticize Trump for being, in their words, soft on Iran, like, you know, for like not being sufficiently bellicose against Iran, which is crazy because Trump is the one who killed the Iran nuclear deal, bragged about imposing starvation sanctions, and, you know, killed Qasem Soleimani, who Katie is
very handsome.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we've come to the end of the show.
But unless Katie, there's anything. I just have to bring this up one more time. Isn't it just so incredible that the rape story, the evidence-free rape allegations that were made against Hamas continue to be parroted, and the actual rape that we know happened, according to not just the victims, but also according to B'Tselem, the Israeli Human Rights Organization, that released a report called Welcome to Hell, that the Israeli media acknowledges, it doesn't show up anywhere in our corporate media.
No, of course not.
People could not care less about rape.
Yeah. And never will. On all those people who, hosted panels like Hillary Clinton, Sheryl Sandberg, the documentary. I mean, they're all completely silent. Yeah. It's just every day we learn something new about like just the complete depravity of our society. It's what can you say? All right. Well, hey, let's end the show with a truth bomb from an unlikely source. It's amazing what happens when you don't have a CNN or MSNBC contract anymore. You can actually start saying things that are true. So Chris Cuomo, who used to be like, you know, primetime CNN anchor, and then he was axed by CNN because of the controversy with he was helping out his brother, Andrew Cuomo, during his troubles as governor. Now Chris Cuomo is with a smaller network, News Nation. And listen to this truth bomb that Chris Cuomo unleashed from the convention floor.
Theme here at the DNC is that they're going to go after corporate gouging. And they're going to go after corporations, whether it's in taxes, largesse, loopholes. The RNC, we heard the same thing. They're going after the elites, the two sets of rules. Let me reveal a reality to you that has to be spoken to here, okay? These are the soldiers. These are the men and the women that go back to their constituencies and their communities, and they fight. They take time from their jobs. They take time from their families. Republicans and Democrats alike, that's what they do. They need to charge these people up. They need to be able to get them on board. But there's another reality that is literally looking down on them. Greg, look at the ring of sweets, okay? This is not unique to Democrats. There is a game of money. When people talk about uniparty, we are strangled by the money reality in our politics. Those suites start at 500 grand. You think there's like a teacher group up in there? You think it's like the Cub Scouts of Columbia County, South Carolina, that's up in those boxes? Some of them are lobbies and good things. The media boxes, you think they're free? Why do you think I'm on the floor? News Nation is not a broke company. Nextstar is a massive organization. We are corporate media. We don't have one of those boxes because that's the game. You pay to play.
I mean, I find this refreshing. I also think it's very clear that his anger and ire is coming from the fact that News Nation was not given one of those boxes.
Definitely. If he was still with CNN, he would definitely be up on those boxes and be like talking about, this is amazing. This is great. This is democracy in action. But this is what happens when you lose your CNN contract. You know, you're forced to be liberated.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a free man or a freer man right here.
Yeah. It's getting radicalized.
Are filled with the same people that they say they're going to regulate. They are literally looking down on the faithful and being told, yeah, we're going to break down on them. We're going to make them pay their share. They paid 500, 700, $1 million, $1.5 million to have those seats. They get hotel suites that are probably gifted to the party. And the same thing is true with the Republican side. And they're going to take them down. They're going to change how it is. They are looking down from on high at the people who make the difference in their communities. And that is the reality of politics. And I had my producer walk around and show you those suites. Now, they're not all the same. But the reality is, in 2000, they spent $300 million on presidential campaigns. 24 years later, you know what they're expected to spend? $10 billion. Do you know how much money Harris has raised in the last couple of weeks? Hundreds of millions. And that's success. A lot of it's small donor. A lot of it isn't. The most dangerous money in politics is now legal money because of Citizens United. You've got to know this. The idea that they can fight against it is almost laughable. It's almost laughable. So look, look and listen when you are told these things. Because I don't care what they promise you. Not here tonight, not at the RNC, not that Trump knows them, not that they don't own them. He did one of the biggest fundraisers I've ever heard of in my life out where I live. Millions of dollars a plate. That's the reality of politics.
Look, they even made a whole graphic with the different prices.
And I think he might close and say, and if they want to let me back up in those boxes, I'll happily throw away my News Nation mic and get right back up there. But until then, I'm speaking truth.
Right. If they want to put up about this, there's one way to do that. Put your brother up. Yeah.
Okay. I found the tweet I mentioned before, and I want to show it because, you know, it speaks to the debate happening right now about the uncommitted movement and what they're doing there. Some people will say, you know, you shouldn't be asking the DNC for a slot on stage. They don't deserve Palestinians on stage, you know, because they're the ones facilitating genocide. You know, very, very debatable. I'm not going to weigh in on who I think is right, but I just think it's an important issue to discuss. And this is what Iman Abdelhadi said. She said, successful movements have radical, progressive, and moderate flanks. We need people working inside the Democratic Party, and we need grassroots organizers, and we need protesters. Find your position and play it, but don't fight your teammates because they play a different position. Yeah. I think it's very persuasive, and especially when you see, I mean, listen, you know, I'm someone who's always on the outside and, like, even on, like, the fringes of the outside. But
like Chris Cuomo.
Like Chris Cuomo, yeah. But when you see the fact that the uncommitted demanding even just a token slot on stage, the fierce resistance they're getting to that and what they're willing to do to protest at a sit-in, and you see what that is exposing to people, it's lifting the mask even more. I think it shows the importance of working on the inside. I think that's something positive here.
Yeah.
And people can have different views, and it's fine, but I just think it's an interesting issue for progressives to think about.
Right. So Steve Woodward writes, Aaron, Katie, somehow I think you two will never get one of those tweets. Thank you. Well, that's what we're trying to do with our Substack. That's what your Substack support of us goes towards. Just kidding.
Yes, it's all for a sweet. We're hoping. Yes.
And thank you, everyone, for your super chats. I want to read this one. It's very nice. Hugo, Perry, Katie, Aaron, thanks for the great work you both do. Thank you so much. And thank you, of course, to everyone else who did.
We lost Katie for a second, but what she was doing is thanking everybody. We are thankful to you for joining us. Okay, here she is.
Sorry about that. Every time I try to scroll on this laptop, which isn't mine, I somehow get exit. But yeah, thank you to Sparky. And Sparky, apologies for skipping your super chats on my show the other night.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap it there. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. Our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there, support the show. Get bonus content. We're very grateful to our producer, Matt Wilson, for taking the time from his vacation to help us do the stream, for making it possible. Thank you, Matt. Thanks to everyone for joining us. We'll see you next week on Useful Idiots.
Bye, everyone.